Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
And a good Friday, everybody. It is DiPietro, Canty, Rothenberg with you right here on 98.7 ESPN. And for those of you that are struggling to remember what day of the week it is, because let's be honest, for the most part, they just all blend in together. You've made it to the end of another very, very long week. It is Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday.
That's right. And if not for the music, we might not know that. So, Rick, we say good morning, and hopefully you guys are safe and sound, and we make it through yet another day and start another weekend here on 98.7 ESPN.
Good morning, Dave. It is another day, and we're going to grind through it. We're going to battle through it. Lucky for me, though, I woke up this morning to the I didn't wake up, actually, so I came out of the gym to the delicious aromas of one Cassandra DiPietro's homemade, freshly baked bread.
How are you guys not 312 pounds?
No, we will. No, you can't see me. We will. I got a mustache that's grown over my lip. I may have put on a couple LBs, but it is Carb Fest 2020 right now.
I mean, Chris, do you think when we see Rick that he's going to be like nominated to go on The Biggest Loser? Everything he tells us is about fresh bake this and bake off this and how they're eating this and that. I mean, he's going to be enormous when we see him.
Well, if he's going to be nominated for The Biggest Loser, I'm going to be on the show with him because my girl made oxtails last night and they were delicious. And all we've been doing is sitting around and eating our faces off. So I'm right there with Rick, man. When you're dealing with uncertain times, Dave, you got to have comfort food. And comfort food is not necessarily the best for your figure. Just saying.
I can't help myself. I'm like a snackopotamus, dude. I'm like White Goodman at the end of dodgeball. Like just, I mean, snack fest. I can't help it.
And I don't think we've ever planned meals more, right? I mean, have you ever in your life planned more for any meal than you have now? I mean, at 9:30 in the morning, Sherry's like, "What do you think you're going to want to do for dinner?" We would never have that conversation regularly.
Yeah, but see, Dave, and this is, I'm glad that you're getting to experience this, because this is exactly why I'm not upset that the NFL is going to have the draft. I'm not upset that the NFL says they're going to have, you know, the season as scheduled, because the meal, the prep for the meal, the dinner, that gets you through the day. It gives you something to look forward to. Like what usually gets me through the week, and this is, I'm not even joking, is pancake Sunday, is whatever I'm going to eat on Sunday gets me through. Like I have something to look forward to. So now it turns into dinner, and just so happens yesterday for dinner I had to make a handmade spanakopita, and then I got yelled at.
Why would you get yelled at for making a handmade spanakopita?
Do you understand? Have you had a spanakopita?
Yeah, I have. Yes, I enjoy it very, very much.
Hold on, guys, you lost me. What is a spanakopita?
It's a spinach pie.
Yeah, and it's very thin crusty dough.
It's phyllo dough. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How is it pronounced again?
Sometimes I'll call it a spankin' a pita if I'm feeling frisky.
Can you spell it, Dave?
Oh, I'm going to say S-P-A-N. The answer would be no. Spankopita. S-P-A-N-A-copita. Yeah,
well, Dave,
I know.
You could have said anything. I wouldn't know the difference. I didn't know what it was until a minute ago.
No, but
it's S-P-A-N-A-K-O-P-I-T-A.
Okay.
Spankopita.
And it's very thin crust, and when you take a bite of it, the crust kind of like crumbles all over the place.
It's labor intensive, is what it is.
All right, so what happened with the spanakopita?
Well, I was going to save this for observations, but I actually have. I mean, this is the creme de la creme of observations that I'll save. But this is just one of the ones that happens yesterday. She tells me in the morning that's what she would like. So she bought the phyllo dough. We had the spinach, the feta, and everything else. So I said, hey, no problem. I mean, I'm more than happy to do it. So anyone that's ever made a spanakopita, people that cook at home, Greek listeners, or if you've eaten it, it's phyllo dough. So in order to make it as the way Dave describes it, I got to take the phyllo dough, I have to put it in between two damp rags, and then phyllo dough is like really, really thin. So I got to take two sheets of phyllo dough at a time, put them in a baking dish, then I have to oil those two. Then I got to take two more, I got to put those down, I got to oil those two.
So this is very labor intensive.
So I got to go through like 2/3 of the phyllo dough on the bottom. Then I got to take the filling, which is spinach, egg, feta, onions, garlic. Then I got to put that in, and then I got to go back to the phyllo dough, and now two and two and two and oil and oil and oil. So Cassie looks at me yesterday. She goes, "You're not done yet?" I said, "Not done yet. You know, I'm taking two pieces of phyllo dough at a time. I'm oiling every layer of this thing." She goes, "Well, what am I going to do? What time am I going to eat?" I said, "Well, you're going to eat at 6 when it's done. It cooks for an hour. You'll eat at 6. She goes, "Ah, you know, we usually eat around 5:30. I said, "What do you want me to do? I'm making a handmade spanakopita." She goes, "I'm not even joking." She goes, "Maybe you should have started earlier."
Wow. I got to be honest. We have the Bob Crafts of the world. We have Oprah just donated $10 million, right? You have people that are tipping wait staff and curbside delivery people and people that bring it to your house. And people are really rising to the occasion. I got to be honest. I don't know who the Cassie is. I mean, between flushing down the toilet brush, blaming you, yelling at you about what's going on with the dinners, you're making probably one of the most difficult things to prepare. It's not like you're telling her, Cass, listen, we're going to eat at 9:45 tonight. You tell her you're going to eat at 6, and she storms off in a huff. What is happening with Cassie?
She's losing a little bit. I mean, yeah. She's homeschooling and everything else. I understand it. I mean, there's a lot of stress going on. But, I mean, it is one of her, and I've known this for the last 20 years, one of her fatal flaws in life is when she gets hangry, forget it. I mean, it's a wrap.
But there's no reason you should be getting hangry now. Chris, if anything, it should be the opposite. At a moment's notice of becoming hungry, you should stuff your face with any of the delicacies going on in that house.
No, you absolutely should. But, Dave, I don't like the tone that you're taking. It feels like there's a lot of judgment from you going toward Cassie. And as long as she's staying home, who are you to tell her how she's supposed to manage dealing with this pandemic?
Well, I think you're right, but here's how I break it down. Is I feel a special connection to Rick and to Cassie. So I feel like if I can call someone out or have judgment, it would be on her because of the close-knit bond that we do, in fact, have. But maybe it's not the kindest thing. Maybe I'm having the same thing. Maybe I'm having issues. I mean, I don't know. It's possible. I'm honest, and maybe I'm honest to a fault. So I'm not trying to offend anyone. I'm just saying, like, this is now the third or fourth time we've heard that Cassie is usually stable and ironclad and nothing gets by and you know, locked in on things, has had moments of, I think you have to question what's going on.
Well, Dave, we already know how Cassie is without a virus or a global pandemic. Now yes. You have this thing that's ravaging the world out there. She's probably flustered a little bit. I can understand how she might lose her mind on occasion. I get it. Sometimes I feel like I'm going to lose my mind just staying in the house all day. I just feel like we need to have more positive vibes going out there, not negative vibes. Don't be critical, man. I'm just saying.
All right. Well, Rick, I apologize. My intent was
No, I appreciate it. Listen, I appreciate you taking my side and standing up for me. I mean, wait till you hear. I mean, it once.
Now, there's more to the story than that?
No, this is a completely separate story. I mean, this one's even worse. I mean,
also about Cassie.
Yeah, your head may explode.
What happens if Chris hears that next story and just he loses it on her? Because he's defending her to the hilt.
No, he'll lose it. I guarantee he'll lose it. That's why I saved it. I gave you a little taste, a little appetizer with the spanakopita. Which came out terrific, but I'll send you a picture. It was fantastic.
Now, how what time did you actually eat? Was it 6 o'clock?
It was 6 o'clock. Yeah, I mean,
was she shaking her head as you guys were stuffing this freshly made spanakopita into your faces? Was she just like, you know,
I mean, she didn't just stuff one piece in her face. I mean, she stuffed multiple pieces in her face. It was delicious, but I mean, it takes time. I'm not going to sit there and rush it. I'm going to do it the right way. And if we have to eat 15, 20 minutes later, then we're going to do it. And she's like, well, you guys eat then. I said, no, we'll wait. Like, the kids will all wait for you. 6 o'clock is not, I mean, it's not 9:30 at night. We'll have plenty of time to digest. We can play our Uno and we'll be fine. Relax.
All right. So, let's get into the world of sports and 800-919-3776, of course. And it's a Friday. So kind of an anything goes kind of a feel to the show. So if you want to say hey or tell us someone that's helping others or anything like that, the phone lines are open. 800-919-3776. I saw the report. I think it was last week. Who could even keep things straight at this point, where Jason Williams had said cruise ship had the NBA postseason. I thought to myself, well, that's a little strange. But then I saw a report earlier today that maybe Las Vegas, maybe they just kind of lock down a quadrant of Las Vegas and they have all the teams go out there, stay in the differing hotels, lock them away, and have the postseason. Here's my take, guys. I don't think there's a wrong answer. Like, if you don't have a home court in the postseason, you don't have home court in the postseason. If it means that you were half a game out and you played one game less than the team in front of you for the eighth spot and you don't get in, those are the breaks. Like, I am not going to judge any of these leagues for if, when, where, if they don't come back, if they do come back. Rick, I am going to be as kind as I've ever been about the world of sports and the potential return moving forward.
Well, I suggested it a couple weeks ago. It wasn't the cruise ship, but it was you know, two locations. And we were talking about the NHL, where you had the Eastern Conference in one location and the Western Conference in another location. And you had, you know, a hotel that you rented out, and it was only players and staff and whoever you needed to have there. What aggravates me, because I agree with you, I mean, if you're going to get creative, now's the time to get creative. Yeah. I mean, we just want to see the sports. But the athletes, and I think baseball is doing a good job. I know, talking to some of my buddies in the NHL, you know, they're willing to do whatever it takes. It's just, you know, some of the stuff you hear coming out of the NBA as far as, you know, God forbid we play games in front of empty arenas. God forbid, you know, we have to be in one generalized area with, you know, our families at home. I mean, it's going to be a sacrifice you're going to have to make to try to get these games, to get this season in. I get it. You don't want to be away from your families. But, I mean, I'm sure your families will be well taken care of while you're gone for however long it ends up being. You get eliminated in the first round, it's a couple weeks. I mean, you make a run to the finals, you're talking about potentially a month or two. But, I mean, there are plenty of people now. I'm sure the people that have to leave their families to go work the grocery store, or the people that have to leave their families to go work in the intensive care units, don't want to necessarily do it. But, I mean, desperate times call for desperate measures. You have to be willing to be a little bit flexible in these situations.
I don't think leaving their families is the biggest deal for the players. I mean, guys want to make their money. And you talked about how the NBA owners wanted to put some of the salaries in escrow and hold that in case there are no more games played this season. I think the biggest hurdle is figuring out logistically what makes sense, because we still can't get a consensus from public health officials as to the best way to try to contain the spread of this virus, other than staying at home and not interacting with anybody else. So obviously, if you're going to play games, you're going to be interacting with other people. There are going to be support staff involved. So you're just trying to figure out how can we go about trying to continue the NBA season and go into the postseason. What's the best avenue to go down? And, you know, whether it's the cruise ship or doing it in Vegas, I think this is one of those things where you're going to have to get everybody together and try to figure out what idea makes the most sense, and then have that approved by the doctors that you actually trust. But I don't think that anybody has any answers as to how best to pull this off right now.
Well, I think the reality of it is this. I don't think you can get any of these sports started necessarily if the biggest hurdle, and we're still not able to solve this part of the problem, is that if one of the players tests positive, that the entire team has to be quarantined. And until you can figure that part of it out, then it would make any sense to start this thing up.
Yeah, no, and that's a scary thought, because this thing is so virulent and so rampant, and it moves from body to body so quickly that, you know, you set it up and you plan it and you have everyone go out there and you play a few games, and then God forbid you have the Rudy Gobert, you know, of moving forward, then you have to just shut it down immediately. So yes, you have to get to the point where the spread of this thing is on the downside, and that's probably going to be weeks and weeks, if not still months and months. But my point was, I'm not criticizing anybody, and usually I'm the first to say I don't like this or this bothers me. Like, whatever these leagues decide, wherever they decide to play, if they lock down Vegas and they do it there, if they cancel the seasons, if they extend the postseason, if they say that instead of 16 teams, we're going to have 8 teams, we're going to limit, like, I'm going to be as easy as possible moving forward, because I think everyone gets the benefit of the doubt in what's going on.
No, I think everyone feels the same way. I guess my only point in saying what I just said was that that's not even a possibility. Like, the possibility to go into Vegas or wherever it is to play, you know, multiple double headers to try to get as many Major League Baseball games in as possible. Maybe you just say, oh, we'll start up the NHL playoffs. That's not even a possibility until you can find a way, if it's some kind of testing or it's safe for the players, that if one gets it, that you don't have to shut down the entire team. If that's still the reality, mm-hmm. that as soon as one guy tests positive, the entire team gets quarantined, then it doesn't make any sense to get anything started yet.
Yeah.
So no, it doesn't make any sense. And here's, from the NBA standpoint, they have to be careful not to put these players at risk, but also not to put any unfair burden on the medical professionals and the health system as a whole, because you recognize that they're trying to contain the spread of this virus. If you're trying to play basketball games and as a result players or staff get infected, then what does that do to the local people that are in the medical profession? I mean, when you're trying to talk about fighting the virus versus playing games, it just doesn't seem like it's any comparison when we start talking about what the true priority should be. So I think that the NBA only gets the benefit of the doubt if they don't play games. If they do decide to play games, it's going to be hard not to open themselves up to scrutiny from the public.
Yeah, I think until you get to a point where this is somewhat treatable, And I mean, I think the hardest thing right now to kind of wrap your head around is how much differently this virus affects certain people. I mean, you have, you know, people that seem healthy that all of a sudden they can try. I mean, you know, 30-year-old men that get it seem healthy, and all of a sudden, I mean, they can't deal with it, as opposed to, I mean, look at Tony Baselli. Have you read that story?
Yeah.
Like, he's,
yeah.
I mean, he's pretty good shape. I mean, former professional athlete, one of the best that's ever done it. He gets it. I mean, he's in the hospital, I mean, on his deathbed, he thinks. His wife gets it. She gets right through it.
Yeah.
So until you get it to a point where it's not life-threatening, it's treatable, where you can look at it the same way as you look at the flu in professional sports, because you're not shutting down games for the flu. Like, flus go through, guys play through it. Until that becomes more of a reality, I mean, you're stuck in this holding pattern.
I don't think we're anywhere close to ending this holding pattern. You know, I mean, best case scenario, we see sports, what are we, April 3rd today? Best case scenario, we see sports in what? Maybe June? Maybe?
I'd say maybe June, probably, yeah. Well, depending on what happens here over the next couple of weeks. And the other thing, too, is it's state to state, too. I mean, how it's affecting the different states.
Right.
What situation your state is in. I mean, the same thing with the NFL draft.
But if people continue to go out and people continue to ignore what they're being told by public health officials, every state's going to look the exact same at some point in the not-so-distant future.
Well, according to the governor of Georgia, he wasn't sure whether or not
that's
it a certain way.
I mean, honestly, I can't even – it's embarrassing. It's sad. I mean, for him to come out yesterday and say that he's just learning that you can pass it on even if you're asymptomatic is – It's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah, I can't believe that's happening, Dave. I mean, but that's the thing that we talked about from the outset of this virus. Once it got to America, we were wondering, well, what's going to happen? We couldn't get a consensus from anybody that was going to be in a position to dictate policy as to how we were going to contain it. So that's the one thing that I'm worried about. And until that part of it gets figured out, I think it's going to be hard for any sports league to figure out how to proceed.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what happens with the NFL draft too, Dave, as far as how they actually do it. Well, yeah, I mean, you saw the memo. I mean, it's no team is going to have an unfair advantage. But, I mean, what's happening in New York is different than what's happening, you know, all over the country and in all these different states, California and everything else. So, I mean, it may be feasible for whatever team to have, you know, five people in their offices to do it, but it may not be for the Jets or the Giants or whoever else.
Yeah, and it's all going to, I mean, it's a different draft than we've ever really had. And we're just going to have to kind of work around and do the best we can, but it's going to be very strange, that's for certain. Did you hear Adam Schefter? Adam Schefter adamant that he doesn't think the right thing to do is to hold the draft in a couple weeks.
I understand what he's saying, and I get it. I mean, the optics of it may not be great, especially with what's going to happen here over the next couple of weeks and when the draft is going to fall. But, I mean, my personal opinion is we said the same thing about NFL free agency. We went through that. It was a welcome distraction. I feel the same way about the NFL draft. You're not putting anyone at risk as far as spreading the virus. I mean, as long as you go about it the right way. And me personally, it would be nice to have a couple of days, a little bit of a reprieve of watching the news and everything else.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Rick. I think that they should proceed with the NFL draft because, you know, this is just something that's procedural. Ultimately, this is just an announcement of players that teams are selecting from the college ranks, and I don't think that puts anybody at any unnecessary risk. This is the NFL going about their day-to-day business. This is not them gathering thousands of fans because they already said that there will be no fans at the draft site. This is just going to be teams announcing the players that they select, and this gives all the sports fans a little distraction, and I think that does something for the psyche of the country when you have something that you can turn to watch on television other than something talking about the coronavirus.
And so that's what it comes down to for me, though, Dave. Tell me if you agree, because, I mean, there's only so much of the news I can watch. I mean, and then you just start getting depressed. I mean, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. When is this thing going to ever stop? I mean, even going to the grocery store the other day, I mean, for the next couple hours after I got home, I was shook, to be completely honest with you. I mean, we're sitting here where everyone's worried about the physical health of people. I think the other thing you need to take into account, especially the longer this thing goes on, is the mental health of people.
I think that's actually bigger for a lot of people, to be honest.
I agree with you.
Right? Because if you're not leaving the house, you're physically, As far as the coronavirus, you're going to be fine. If you and everyone are on complete lockdown, you're not going to wind up getting this thing. But this is something we've never seen. You don't leave your house for months. You know, you don't lock away and not get fresh air. And I know you can, but it's such a different normal that we've been experiencing. And let's be honest, we're what, 3 weeks in of potentially God knows how long. So just the unknown of how long this is going to last for has to be wearing on a lot of people.
Yeah, and I don't think you know, too. I mean, if you're the NFL, I think it was the same reason why, you know, the NBA and NHL were trying to get as many games in as possible, because, you know, I mean, you don't know what the next week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or month is going to look like. So if you can take, I mean, if you can take one of the things like the NFL draft and get that done, it puts you in a better position moving forward that when this thing does clear up, then you can have, I mean, it's one less thing to worry about. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to all of a sudden postpone the draft and then it gets worse.
Sure.
Next week, and then the week after it's even worse. Then all of a sudden, when this thing does finally, we are through this and there is some semblance of normalcy, you still got to do the draft, and that puts you behind the eight ball as far as when your season can start.
And that's why I thought that the NFL should move forward, just because we don't know definitively that if you did delay the draft, anything would change. Like, that's what we've been saying all along. That's why I said earlier this week, Roger Goodell was doing the prudent thing, going about business as usual, because again, free agency and the draft are procedural things. You're not talking about large gatherings. You're not talking about getting the entire team together. You're not talking about fans being at risk. So I felt like that made a whole lot of sense. Now, when it comes to preparation for training camp in the regular season, we'll see where we're at that point. But right now, I think the NFL is doing the right thing by trying to go about business as usual. I heard the guys on the K-Show yesterday afternoon talking about it, and they're absolutely right. The NFL has the benefit of this thing happening in their off season and not during their regular season. If this was during the NFL regular season, the NFL would absolutely cancel games. So it's not like the NFL is being tone deaf, but I do think the NFL can go about its business in the off season without having the players and coaches and front office staff being gathered in one place.
Well, I don't think there's a right or wrong, but I don't think that Schefter's issue was the fact that it's putting people at danger. I think his issue was more, we have our country in a time of absolute crisis. And I'm not saying that he's right. I'm just kind of, you know, trying to hammer home the point that he's making. We're in a tremendous time of crisis. We have hundreds of people dying today. We're going to have thousands of people dying tomorrow. By the time we get to April 23rd, God knows how many people are going to perish. How bad of a look is it for the NFL that we're going to be like, with the third pick, Detroit will select... What?
Why would it be a bad look? Why is it a bad look? Because it's live TV?
No, I don't think it has
anything to do with live. So what's the difference between... Well, that could be the only difference. I mean, how many millions of people have watched The Tiger King? I mean, people are starving to watch things. The only difference is that it's live. If it's live and it's not a group of people gathered up and no one's at risk, there's no different than having it as something that's already been pre-taped.
And to your point, Rick, I mean, they're having WrestleMania this weekend. Now, granted, it's going to look a little different, but that's a sports adjacent event that's going to be televised. The UFC is trying to continue business as usual. So it's not like they're the only sport that's trying to move forward in the midst of this crisis. I think this is the time where folks need that little respite to have a little bit of entertainment, have a way to get away from the virus. So I don't see the downside of it from an optic standpoint. I just don't.
Santi, I know you're back there. I know you got a lot going on. Do you have the Schefter sound that we can hear so we can kind of react off of that? All right, so you take your time. Here's what we'll do. We'll take this call, and then we'll get to Schefter in just a moment. Dave and Edison. Dave, you're next up on 98. Or first up, I should say.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
ESPN.
How you doing? It's a shame that tomorrow would be the Final Four, so I'm kind of depressed about that. But I got a question for you, Dave. Did you ever play the board games growing up, the Avalon Hills sports games, Status Pro Football, Status Pro Baseball?
The what game?
Status Pro Football, Status Pro Baseball.
No, I played Stratomatic as a kid, but I never heard of Status Pro.
Yeah, it's basically like Stratomatic, that they use player cards. They use cards instead of dice. So you pick a card, and it corresponds to, like, the player cards.
Mm-hmm. No, never played it. Not only have I never played, I never heard of it.
Okay, well, I got the basketball for the NBA, but what I did was I made it into an NCAA, and I did all the player cards for all 68 teams. And it's a shame because now I'm, like, more prepared for this tournament than any tournament, and there's, like, no tournament to play.
Yeah. But. Listen, I mean, I love the – and thanks for the call, Dave. Love March Madness, but drastic times call for drastic measures, and I don't think anybody's questioning why in fact we're not having this thing. All right, here he is, Schefter, very upset with the NFL for moving forward with the draft.
We all want to see the days where we have that distraction of football, but OTAs, that's not happening. Yeah. The offseason program, that's not happening. The draft is happening only through the sheer force and determination and lack of foresight from Phil, frankly. I mean, they are determined to put this on while there is carnage in the streets.
And that is that's Adam Schefter's take. And again, I don't have an issue with it going on, but I do understand what he's talking about, Rick. I do.
No, I understand what he's talking about. And I think that for me would have been a better argument against having free agency start when free agency started. Talking about, I mean, you know, the unemployment, people dying and everything else, and you start celebrating, you know, guys signing for, you know, $40-50 million, whatever it ends up being. But I mean, the beauty of the draft is it's the celebration of, you know, these young men realizing their dreams. I mean, that's the kind of, don't you think that's the kind of inspirational stuff we need at this point?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think they need to do a good job of really, really hammering home like the stories of these guys this coming draft.
A lot of these guys have come from nothing, Dave.
Yeah,
from nothing.
Yeah.
From broken families. I mean, you hear the stories, guys being homeless, living in the car with their mother. And then all of a sudden they find a way because of sheer determination and physical talent to get themselves into a point where they can get drafted and they can, like James Bradbury said, first thing he's going to do is going to retire his mom. And those are great stories that would help lift the spirits, I think, of people that watch it.
We love those stories regardless. Like we are suckers for the human interest stories. I think ESPN, NFL Network, without a doubt, has to hammer home those stories more this draft than they ever have, Chris.
No, I think it would be cool, man, because the prospects aren't going to be at the actual draft location. So being able to have some footage of them behind the scenes at their homes with their families, like I just think that would be cool to see the raw emotion that they're going through, that they're experiencing the moment they find out where their football future is going to be. So I'm with Rick on this one. I think it would be great. I understand what Schefter's trying to say. But I still don't understand what the downside is on the optics of it. I still just don't get it. To me, it's just all positive right now as far as the NFL is concerned because I don't think you're putting anybody at risk.
I think the only negative is to the GMs and everyone else involved in making some of these picks.
Yeah, their job is harder.
But that's right. Yeah, it's going to be harder. But at this point, it's hard for everybody.
At least they're all on an equal playing field. Like Joe Douglas and Dave Gettleman, and I mean, you pick the GM. It's not like one guy has an advantage over another guy. They're all under the same constrictions here.
I don't disagree, and I think Chris feels the same way. I mean, it's not ideal. Everyone gets that. Well, I mean, we're not in an ideal situation right now. You make it work.
But Rick, the reality is, guess what? Your job just didn't start a couple of months ago. You should have been scouting these guys the entire calendar year. That's where GMs make their money. They're putting together their teams. They're putting together their draft boards this time of year. But in terms of knowing their needs and knowing what prospects are going to be in the upcoming draft, that's something that starts well in advance of the beginning of the new league year in March.
You know what's amazing? I'm not sure if you guys heard this or not. So I'm watching PFT this morning, and Peter King was on, and they were talking about the draft and, you know, some of the obstacles, how there's a lot of GMs saying that, you know, as you get later in the rounds, you try to hit singles as opposed to, you know, hit home runs and triples or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It blew my mind. And he actually makes this point that the Cincinnati Bengals were infamous for this, where they had an awful scouting department, like barely any scouting department. So when they got into the later rounds, they would take the guy that had fallen in the draft because of whatever issue it was, you know, bad guy, injury related, but they had no idea who else to draft. So like, you know what? We'll just take the guy that was supposed to get drafted in the second round, but now is available in the fifth round.
Yeah. Does that surprise you even a little bit that would be the Cincinnati Bengals?
Rick, you're talking about the team that Vontaze Burfict started his pro career with.
When he said it, I was like, God, we give these people because they make so much money, we just give them the benefit of the doubt that they're really qualified to do these jobs. And there's a lot of them that aren't.
Well, why do you think that they never, ever win?
Oh, it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But just to hear it, I mean, it's like when, I mean,
I don't think they're trying to win, Dave. I'm going to be honest. I don't think the Cincinnati Bengals are trying to win.
So you think if they get 70,000 people in their stadium and they win seven games and they're somewhat competitive, they're very happy with that?
Isn't that what the Cincinnati Bengals have shown you in the modern era? Cincinnati Bengals don't spend big in free agency. They're not players in free agency at all. They're almost like the Green Bay Packers. The Cincinnati Bengals want to keep it real profitable. I don't think they really care about winning.
Those poor fans. I mean, could you imagine being a fan of a team that just, they're not even trying, they're not even concerned about winning?
No, I couldn't. Well, I mean, we kind of get a taste of that with the Mets a little bit. Like,
no,
we just get lucky once in a while.
The Mets were in the World Series in 2015. When was the last time the Bengals won a playoff game, Chris?
Oh, man, Dave, you're talking about, what, you got to go back to Carson Palmer?
I mean, No. Wasn't it? Did they win the playoff game?
They didn't win one with Andy Dalton.
No, but he got hurt, didn't he? And didn't the kid from Alabama win the game?
McCarron?
Didn't McCarron win the playoff? No.
The last time they won a playoff game is from Santee. It's 1991. 1991.
They haven't won a playoff game in 30 years.
They beat the Houston Oilers.
They beat a team that doesn't even exist anymore. That's how long.
They were doing the icky shuffle after that game, Dave.
Oh, my God. 91. That is unbelievable. All right. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, your nose, your mouth. Stay home when you're sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and 98.7 ESPN. New York. These trying times, very important to remember we pull together as a community. Small businesses all over are going to be feeling the lasting effects of this pandemic. If you are a small business trying to get the word out that you're still serving the community, let us know. Send an email to 987ESPN@gmail.com. Let us know your story so we can pass the word along to our community. Like Antonio's Kitchen, located at 76-8 21st Avenue in East Elmhurst, right by LaGuardia Airport. Antonio's is offering you their passion for pizza. Send them an email to antonioskitchenny@gmail.com or give them a call, 718-728-9200. Rick, anybody that has a passion for pizza is okay in my book.
Yeah, I love pizza. Love pizza. If you gave me the option of you could eat one thing.
No, it wouldn't be
for
pizza.
The rest of your life.
You'd go pizza?
I think I would. Pizza's so versatile, man. I mean, there's so many things you can do with pizza. If that's my only option, I can have breakfast pizza.
Yeah.
I can have sausage. I mean, there's so many things you can do with the pizza.
But couldn't you say so many things you could do with the sandwich too? You could have a turkey sandwich, a roast beef sandwich, ham and Swiss sandwich. Like, there's many different sandwiches you can have.
You can have sandwiches, but I mean, you can also take whatever you put on the sandwich and put it on the pizza.
The pizza is more versatile than the sandwich, Dave.
I can have a
you could have a dessert pizza. You can't have a dessert sandwich.
No, you could have a dessert sandwich.
Yeah, I guess ice cream sandwich, but that, I mean.
Ooh, now we're talking.
That would be
a beautiful sandwich.
But I mean, outside, but you could do so many different things with the pizza.
I do love the pizza. I might have to have a pizza this weekend.
How could you? We should order from Antonio's.
Little taco pizza. Cassie makes an unbelievable taco pizza. Oh,
is it timely though? Like if she says it'll be ready at 5:30, will it in fact be ready at 5:30?
Yeah, she sticks to her gun. Like when she says it's going to be done, it's usually done. So I mean, I guess I take the blame for not having the spanakopita ready when it was supposed to be ready. I didn't know it was like a time constraint.
You're such a good because the fact that you are, I mean, doing things I can't even. What's happening here? Like taking rags and things and wetting them in two pieces at a time and you're willing to do that to make the spanakopita, and it's not timely, and now you're going to turn out to be the bad guy days later? I mean, you really are a good husband.
I try to be, man. She's the best wife. I mean, she's an unbelievable mother, an unbelievable wife. So whatever I can do to facilitate her being happy, I'm going to do it.
All right. So the
athletic. It wasn't tough for me to get the wet. I mean, it wasn't that hard.
I don't know. If they said go make spanakopita. I wouldn't have the first idea of what I was supposed to do.
Dave, I wouldn't know where to start. Now, I did check in with my girlfriend, and she has had it before. She's never made it, but she feels confident that she could pull it off if and when it's deemed necessary. So, that is out
there. At what point do you think spanakopita is deemed necessary? Like, do you think 2 weeks from now we're like, all right, we're in a mad desperation for spanakopita. We got
to
get some.
Well, I don't know, man. Now that you guys have brought it up and you're talking about how delicious it is, I might have to... I might have to see if she can get in the kitchen and bang some pots and whip it up.
I like that. I like that idea. All right, I want to get to the Giants and the Jets. The Athletic has some comments from other GMs about both of these teams, but this might be the most interesting call we've taken in quite some time. Mike in Long Island. Mike, you're next up on 98.7.
Gentlemen, how are you guys?
What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Rick, big fan. Islander fan since back in the day. Was there for the 4 Stanley Cups. I know that was before your time, but love you, man. Have a question for Chris. I was supposed to be in Italy right now, but obviously not. I was there a couple years ago, and I'm a big guy, about 6'1", 250, 260.
Mm-hmm.
How did you fare in bathrooms, the bed, showers? I could not fit in anything over there.
No, I was all good, man. It was perfect for me. We had great accommodations. My girl planned the entire trip, so I don't know the names of the places that we stayed outside of the San Pietro when we were in Positano, but I had an amazing time, and I didn't have any problems fitting into bathrooms or fitting into cars or anything like that. I was all good.
Even the public bathrooms, like when you go to restaurants and stuff, like squeezing my butt, I'm going to say the other word, into the, it was rough for me.
I didn't have any of those problems, man. Even the restaurants, it was good.
All right, cool. All right. Because you're a lot bigger than me.
Canty ain't eating at the same restaurants we're eating at. Canty's eating at the creme de la creme.
Well, hold on, Rick. You gave me the restaurant recommendations.
How dare you?
You told me to eat at Shea Black and... Dude, you're the one that told me to eat at Shea Black and Positano.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly.
Come on, man.
what do you think? Canty is going to restaurants known for the largesse of their bathroom? I don't think so.
Well, I'm sure he was traveling, you know, at a higher star rate than I was, but I was not at, like, hostels and stuff. But, I mean, more power to you, man. That's awesome.
All right.
After seeing the movie Hostel, you could offer me $1 billion. I wouldn't stay at a hostel. No.
I hate that movie. Honest to goodness, but I hate that movie. It is repulsive. There is no reason for it. I don't know why they made that movie. People that think that's a good movie and well done are evil people. I don't understand that movie at all. That's a terrible movie.
I'm all set with that movie.
Yeah, I'm not about traveling abroad and backpacking and not having any definitive plans as to where I'm staying at. Like, I'm just not on board with that.
No.
Like, just getting a backpack and getting on a plane and just using the force to figure out your trip, I'm not about that at all.
Certainly not.
I need to have an itinerary.
Dude, my first sleepover as a kid, I begged my parents, I need to have a sleepover. Matt wants to sleep over at the house. I never used to, and this is not my own fault. This is my parents' fault. So we would all, like, it took a while for me, like, to force me to sleep in my own room. And as part of, like, the incentive to sleep in my own room, they got me, like, this tent for the top of my bed. So it was, like, this cool tent. I'd sleep in it for, like, 2 hours. Yeah, it's like this tent that goes on the top of your bed. Like, so you think it'd be cool to sleep in your own room.
Mm-hmm.
So I would sleep in it for, like, 2 hours. I would wake up, and I would be terrified. So I'd go in their room. So I begged them, I got to have a sleepover. You got to stay in your own room. Okay, no problem, Mom. I'll stay in my own room. So this poor kid, Matt, comes and sleeps over. So I had a trundle bed. So he was on the bottom. I was on the top of the tent. 2 hours into the sleepover, I woke up, went in my parents' room, and poor Matt woke up to no one in my bedroom.
You left Matt by himself?
His parents had to come pick him up.
Oh, so let me see if I can understand this. You're terrified. God knows what happens. Middle of the night, you crawl into bed with your parents. This poor kid. Now, how old are you guys at this point?
I was probably, I don't know, you know, 5 or 6 years old.
So you're 5 or 6 years old. This poor kid wakes up in a strange home thinking, let me find comfort in at least my host being right there next to me. Looks over, probably stubbing his toe as he does that, and you are missing?
Oh, I'm lights out. I'm REM sleeping.
Oh, come on.
Oh, bad friend. That was terrible.
That was
terrifying.
So now he obviously, does he just start crying or does he walk into your parents' room as well? Is there like a party in your parents' room at this point?
No, he's bawling, crying. So my parents had to go in and then they yelled at me because obviously I left him. But then he wanted to go home. So he had to call his parents and they had to go pick him up.
So middle of the night?
Yeah, middle of the night. It's probably like, I don't know, two, three in the morning. I'm not proud of it. What do you want me to tell you?
Poor Matt.
I'm a bad guy.
That is unbelievable.
So the chances of me staying at a hostel is 0%. Less than 0%.
Couldn't even stay in your tent in bed.
Couldn't even stay in my beautiful tent. It was out.
I know what we'll get. He's always in our room. Well, you know what we'll get him? We'll get him a tent.
I don't know. For some reason, I have this image in my head of Rick as a little kid staying in a teepee tent, kind of like the kid at Parasite in the movie. That's the image that I have of Rick in a tent.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I wasn't in the tent for long. That tent lasted probably like 2 days. 2 days and probably 3 hours of sleeping in it. It was done.
Of course you're terrified in the tent. All right. So Athletic article on the Jets and the Giants and their free agency. You want me to read through a little bit of what the anonymous GMs have to say about the Jets and the Giants? Where would you like me to begin, with the Jets or the Giants?
Let's start with the Giants.
All right. Cornerback James Bradberry, linebacker Blake Martinez were the Giants' most expensive signings. All right, here we go. I don't think the Giants did badly in free agency, an executive said, offering what sounded like a strong endorsement compared to criticisms levied against the team in recent offseasons. Quote, the Giants lost guys like Mike Remmers, Antonio Hamilton, who are easily replaced. They're not overpaying to keep marginally better or the same players. Another GM said, what are they going to do with Leonard Williams? To me, he's Jadeveon Clowney. They both think they're worth more than they're worth, and no one wants to pay them. The stats do not tell the story, and even if you like him, it's tough to convince the owner that he's a dynamic, game-changing player. They should lose him, but then that makes the GM look bad, and that is never the answer when you have one of these jobs and you feel the need to constantly be the one to make the right decision. So one GM or one scout gives him kudos for what they've done. One beats up the Leonard Williams move, and here's the other. Varied opinions on Bradberry. Great guy, really good player. Not a great one, but a really good player, one evaluator said of Bradberry. He is one of those guys who could drop off fast because he's big and not a natural quick twitch guy, kind of like the Minnesota guy Xavier Rhodes who just dropped off. But for right now, he's a very good player. So overall, and I think we all agree about Leonard Williams, not awful reviews for what the Giants did in free agency.
Yeah, here's the question, though, for you guys. Did the anonymous executive have a fake Boston accent?
Yeah, that he liked exactly what he, in fact, was doing.
The quarterback is great. Free agency's been great. We did a hell of a job. I don't think what the Giants have done has been bad.
No, I don't think it's been bad either. I think the deals that they made sense. It's just with the Bradberry deal, I didn't like the money on it, but you did need to have a veteran in there that could provide some leadership to that young secondary. So from that aspect of it, I see where Dave Gettleman was going. It's a player that he has some familiarity with because he drafted him down in Carolina. It makes sense. I just don't know if you're going to get the production based on the pay scale.
We'll see how long he's good for also, right? I mean, reading some of these reviews is that he's a guy that might be good for a short period of time and not stand the test of time. But you needed him, and you weren't going to spend
clear
that
upgrade.
Kind of money on Byron Jones, and he's probably the next best corner that was available.
He's a clear upgrade from what you had.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
Your secondary was horrendous.
Well, we said that about Tremaine Johnson when the Jets signed him in free agency, didn't we?
If he's Tremaine Johnson, I'm done.
I'm not saying that he is, Dave, but coming from the Rams, we thought Tremaine Johnson was going to be a number one corner for the Jets. And what did they get? A year and a half out of him?
Oh, he stole money.
And how much money did they sink into him? Nearly $40 million bucks? It's ridiculous.
But if he is anything close to Tremaine Johnson, Dave Gettleman is unemployed.
Well, Dave, I think we might be headed down that road anyway.
Right.
I mean, there's a strong chance anyway.
I mean, but that's his number one free agent signing. If he's not really good, Gettleman's in heaps of trouble.
Well, the one thing I will say that's a positive is that all of the guaranteed money from these free agent deals, the majority of it, is going to hit the cap this year. So it's not going to impact your financial flexibility in future years, whether Gettleman's your GM or not. So from that standpoint, I like the direction that the Giants went in. They needed to provide some veteran leadership on the defensive side of the ball because they got a bunch of puppies over there that they're hoping can grow into solid NFL players. But it has yet to be proven whether or not those guys would be any good. On the offensive end, you're trying to develop a young quarterback and take advantage of the prime years of Saquon Barkley. So, I mean, we'll see where the Giants are at. I don't think any of the moves that they've made are going to impact this team, whether or not they're going to be a team that could potentially compete and get into the playoff picture in December. I just don't see that.
You know what? I will say this about both. I mean, and I think Joe Douglas has done a good job so far from what we've seen. But as far as Mike Maccagnan and what I've seen from Dave Gettleman, the one thing that aggravates me the most, and probably most about Dave Gettleman, is it just feels like the lack of creativity when you talk about the draft. Like the lack of flexibility. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like we're taking Saquon Barkley with two, that's it. And then, I mean, with the OBG with the OBJ trade? Like, we're not going to take that offer from Cleveland and at least shop it a little bit? I just it frustrates me a little bit.
Yeah, it does feel like he's very set in his ways, and he's old school, and this is how it's done, and this is how I'm going to do it, and I'm not going to deviate from the plan, and if you don't like it, then get out of my way, right? That's kind of feels like the MO of Gettleman.
Well, it just feels like, I mean, it feels like, you know, it never hurts to pick up the phone and at least ask. And what's the worst that's going to happen? They're going to tell you no? I mean, do you really think that, you know, when Arizona picked up the phone and offered Houston what they offered him, that they thought they were going to say yes? Probably not, but they did.
Yeah, it's worth a try, I guess. And he was so stubborn with the Barkley. So stubborn. Like, he wouldn't even pick up the phone with Barkley. And you can.
No, you'd like to hear, like, even with the Daniel Jones deal. Like, I get there were probably teams that might have taken Daniel Jones before you had the opportunity to pick him with your second first-round pick. But, I mean, if you were going to trade back up into the first round, you wanted to have, like, you were going to get a little bit creative. I mean, why not try to get back up and get Josh Allen or something? You know what I mean? Like, just, I don't know. I feel like they could do more.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Rick. They should. You just want them to be forward thinking to kind of see ahead of the curve a little bit. Kind of like what we saw from the Atlanta Falcons this year in free agency, right? They knew they were going to lose Austin Hooper. They weren't going to be able to pay him $11 million a year. So they did the next best thing. They picked up the phone. They called the Baltimore Ravens and they traded for Hayden Hurst and gave up a second round pick for him. Like, those are the types of moves that you would want your general manager to be able to make to have a contingency if and when you're ended up losing a player or if and when you're in position to take advantage of a team that can't afford a player. So I just feel like Dave Gettleman hasn't shown that creativity with the Giants, and he hasn't shown that creativity when he was with the Carolina Panthers. So that's one of those things that concerns you about a guy that's supposed to be responsible for your rebuild, because you recognize how important these formative years are for Daniel Jones in his pro career.
All right, you want to hear what they say about the Jets? Your fancy New York Jets?
Nah, I read some of it already, so I'm not looking forward to it.
Not very optimistic.
No, it's not great. No,
One exec says, what is worse, tying yourself to Le'Veon Bell for $27 million guaranteed or tying yourself to Fant and McGovern for $31 million guaranteed? Another one says, I like Fant as a third tackle. Another exec says, and McGovern he's okay. Another exec says, Fant is really a developmental tackle. And another one says, I don't think they fixed their line at all. A GM, with some positivity, says, Perriman played well. Now he has to prove he can do it for a season. It's always for four or five games with him, never for the full season. So many different people tied to the NFL closely are very seemingly unimpressed with what the Jets did in free agency.
Yeah, but I think that's something. I don't think the whoever said that, I mean, of course you can say whatever you want when you're anonymous, but whoever said that about Fant, I don't think is necessarily wrong. I mean, I think what Joe Douglas was trying to do, he takes a one-year flyer on him. Hopefully they can develop him. But let's not forget, too, they have the 11th overall pick. So you add depth on offensive line, and then hopefully you give yourself the opportunity to take a tackle with the 11th pick. And if you don't have the tackle there that you want, the reason, you know, why you feel comfortable letting Robbie Anderson walk out the door is because you could pivot quickly to Perriman, and at 11, you get the best wide receiver in the draft if you want.
Yeah, I think whoever's given that criticism is not looking at the big picture of what Joe Douglas is trying to do. He's trying to get a lot of bodies to fix the problem areas on the team, the things that he's identified as needs. And so he went out and he re-signed Alex Lewis. He got George Fant, and it's a low-risk proposition. You're talking about, what, $9 million in guaranteed money. Connor McGovern was, by all accounts, the best center on the free agent market, so you're able to lock him up. I just feel like those moves actually made a whole lot of sense. And then Greg Van Roten obviously adding depth for the interior of that offensive line. All of those moves made sense in trying to fix a unit that allowed your quarterbacks to get sacked 52 times last year.
Yeah,
okay? Your GM
amazing.
Has to protect your quarterback. So even though these might not be home run type of moves, I think that they were solid moves. And the best thing that Joe Douglas did was not inhibit any flexibility that he's going to have in 2021 and beyond. So this is not a year where the Jets are competing for a championship, and I think their general manager knows it. So he wants to see if he can find, you know, fiscally responsible ways to fix what has easily been identified as the biggest area of need for improvement for the Jets.
And I've said this before, and this is going to ring true for me, at least for the time being. He gets from me, at least, the benefit of the doubt. Like, I just believe until I see Joe Douglas go down a wrong path or something I really don't like, I have to watch it play out on the field and let's give him the, you know, like, free agency benefit of the doubt, draft benefit of the doubt. Let's see what the team looks like. And only then can we start to analyze what he's done.
Dave, I don't think this is the time to start mortgaging draft picks and start spending all the money that you have in your cap, you know, for this year and in future years. I don't think this is the season to do that. I don't think you're one or two pieces away from being a championship contending team. So if you're not that, then focus on building a solid foundation. Focus on trying to get the most out of your young, developing franchise quarterback. To me, those are the things that he should prioritize. And from what we've seen so far, that's what it looks like he's doing. So I don't know how you can be overly critical of the moves that Joe Douglas has made to this point.
You know what I like too is that, I mean, in Joe Douglas's background as, I mean, as an offensive lineman, is that the players that he signed, I know they're not, I mean, they're not splash signings. I mean, they may be names that you're not accustomed to hearing, but they're, I mean, they're similar kind of players. Is for the most part, they've stayed healthy and they don't take penalties, which I love because that's all the Jets have done over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Is take penalties on the offensive side of the ball and put themselves behind the chains with negative plays. And once you start doing that, you're not going to score points, man. That's the reality of the game. You start taking stupid holding penalties or sacks. I mean, Chris mentioned 52 sacks. I mean, there's a reason why you were the worst offense in the National Football League.
You know, the other thing I like, Rick, about what Joe Douglas is doing, those offensive linemen that he signed, those are very athletic guys. Yep. And so with Adam Gase and that zone running scheme that he wants to employ, you need guys that are good athletes up front. And all of those guys are pretty good athletes. So I think in terms of trying to fit what the head coach's philosophy is on the offensive side of the ball, I think their general manager is in tune to that and trying to get guys to fit in and be pieces of the puzzle that Adam Gase is trying to put together. So, these moves are not moves that are going to kill you if they don't work out. I think he's protected against the downside. But if you do happen to catch lightning in a bottle and this group does gel this season, then you got something. Then you have solid protection at a relatively low cost for your young quarterback on a rookie deal.
Yeah, what you're missing out on the offensive side of the ball is clearly you need an upgrade, or you could use an upgrade at the tackle position, and you need to find a number one wide receiver. You have to, especially
yes.
in your division.
Yes, you need a stud wide receiver, and I think you need a big-time tackle, and we'll see where they go at 11. Well, we have a lot of guests, certainly on the show. Some outstanding, a lot of them outstanding, as a matter of fact, but none I think we've been more excited to speak to in quite a while than the head coach of Army Hockey. That, of course, is Brian Riley. And Coach, we appreciate a couple minutes and a lot of things we certainly want to get into during the course of this conversation. But before we jump off at all, how are you? How is your family and how are you personally handling all this going on right now?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. It's obviously in this time of uncertainty, when it first happened, just kind of trying to figure out what to do. But now I've kind of figured out a routine and try to go about that every day. As a coach, sometimes you're torn away from your family. But I'm so blessed. I guess the one good thing about this virus is I have my whole family here. And it's actually kind of neat to be sitting around the table at dinner and having opportunities just to be with loved ones. But certainly a crazy time. But I think being here at West Point, I've just been so impressed with the leadership. And one thing I know that I've learned that with the Army, they know how to plan. And so they are doing their best, obviously, to keep everybody safe up here.
Hey, Coach, let me ask you this question. Is there any added pressure? I mean, reading some of your story, the fact that, I mean, this has been passed on, you know, generation to generation. Mm-hmm. Your dad started the program, then your brother, and now you. Is there any extra pressure that goes along with that?
Well, you know what? So my dad started in 1950. He was a successful college player at Dartmouth and then coached the national team, player coach, and so he came to West Point. The story is that he came here for 1 year and he stayed for 36. So, then my brother took over and as a kid growing up with my dad, You know, like I said, he was a successful coach. He coached, I'm sure you guys know the story, he actually cut Herb Brooks here at West Point when he was coaching the 60 Olympic team. And so as a kid, you know, he's a Boston guy. He was from Medford, Mass. I always wondered why he didn't go back to like a BC or a BU, you know, a big hockey school. And now having kind of sat where he sat, I know why he stayed. You know, the opportunity to be around cadets on a daily basis and know that during their 47-month experience, you, meaning me, as a coach, play a small role in helping to shape and develop these young men to be future leaders, you know, leaders that are going to go out and lead this nation's sons and daughters. So really, I haven't looked at it as any pressure. You know, to be quite honest, I pinch myself that I get to coach here at West Point.
Coach, you talked about trying to navigate this unprecedented, uncertain time we're living in, trying to find your schedule, your routine. I remember when I was a student athlete at Virginia during 9/11, I was away from my family, and I looked to my coach for leadership. So what's the message to your current team about how to manage this uncertain time?
Oh, well, so of all the schools in the country, I think that the cadets here at West Point spend the least amount of time with their families than any school out there. So the fact that they're at home is, I think, something that they are enjoying. But, hey, I've been telling them they have to keep their foot on the gas. You know, they're doing this online learning like every other school out there. Bottom line is they're going to get graded for it, right? So not only do they have to stay focused with the books, but the other thing, you know, you have to be in physical shape here at West Point. You have, you know, physical aptitude tests, the Army physical tests that you need to take and pass here. So the other thing I'm telling them is, you know what, they can't be sitting on the couch eating Mallow Mars or Cheez-Its. Like they got to make sure that they are doing their best to that's what I'm doing, eating Mallow Mars and Cheez-Its, but they can't be doing that. So, you know what? So just telling them to continue, have the self-discipline, you know what, to do at home what they would be doing here.
The head coach of Army hockey, Brian Riley, joins us here, 98.7 ESPN. So obviously the season ends abruptly, and certainly it's disappointing. Are you guys in touch? Do you still have, you know, online team meetings? Are there Zoom conferences they're getting together and just continuing the conversation?
So I am not the most computer-savvy guy, but I'm learning. I have my daughter here who's kind of really helping guide me through this. But what I do is I'll call a different class every day. So today's the seniors. So and that includes our managers. So every day I am touching base with one of the classes. So every 4 or 5 days I will talk to them. When I get a little braver here, I'm going to try one of these Microsoft meetings with everybody. But definitely staying in touch with them. And even as a staff, you know, my coach that I work with here, associate coach Zach McKelvey, we meet every day at 1. Obviously, you still need to be focusing on your recruiting. We've got to talk about this past year and be ready to have player meetings. So we talk every day as a staff, meaning our equipment manager, ops, trainer. We get together at least once a week, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. So you do, like I talked about at the beginning, have a staff or have some routine. And you need to, because even though we're in times of uncertainty and we're not in the office, you still have to be preparing for next season.
Coach, this is my first foray into coaching this season. Mm-hmm. And I coached the high school team. And, you know, having been a player and gone through some tough losses, I mean, there's certain ones that always stick with you. And they were tough. But to walk into the locker room after we lost our final game and to see the looks on the seniors' faces, you know, with the tears and everything else, it was the hardest post-game speech I've ever had to make. I could only imagine that your level I mean, reading some of the story of this year's team and how, you know, you had a home ice and everything seemed to kind of be lining up with guys getting healthy. How hard was that to have that conversation when you found out that the season was going to be canceled?
It was probably the worst experience in my over 30 years that I've had in coaching. So, you know what? We can all circle the calendar for when the season starts. Like, everybody knows the date that your season's going to start. And you never are really prepared for the ending because it usually comes, you know, through some type of playoff format. You know, in our situation, it could have come in game two of a three-game series. It could have come in our semifinals or finals. But you're never, ever prepared. All of a sudden, it just happens. But in some respects, you kind of control your own destiny because you're usually playing. In this situation, you know, things started to progress really rapidly. Like that sports news cycle from Wednesday when the NBA player, you know, where they stopped the game and he tested positive, to that Thursday afternoon when just about every college program was shut down was amazing. Like, we were on the ice Thursday at 10 o'clock, and the meeting I had with the guys beforehand was, hey, guys, it looked like we were going to have people allowed to come in the building, but now it looks like we're probably going to have limited attendance. So just be ready for that. But things were happening so fast, I didn't even go on the ice. I was on the phone trying to convince our commissioner to, hey, maybe we should try to condense the tournament to one weekend. And I was walking him through how I thought we could do it. And by the end of the conversation, you know, he told me, hey, we're going to have an emergency call at, I think, 12:30. So I went and told the guys, hey, you know what, stay around. We're going to have a meeting here. And at 12:45, I found out that our season was over. All our players were either in the locker room and the team room. And I said, hey, guys, let's go into the room. And they were all just looking at me, and I couldn't even say anything. And all I said to them was, guys, our season's over. And I can remember looking in particular at our seven seniors, and their heads just dropped. And to be quite honest, I don't even know what I said after that. There was just, you're in this room and dreams were shattered, like probably like a lot of teams, but we had a real good feeling. I remember telling our guys in October, guys, there's something special about this group. Like I think we're going to do something that, and I just think we were on track for that. We were finally in a situation where the first time all year, you know, we have a good senior group of forwards, but they hadn't played together all year. And they were finally all healthy, and we were going to be on the ice together this playoff series. And like I said, it was just a feeling of, hey, we felt like we were going to, like, do something special, and then it just ended.
Coach, earlier this week, the NCAA announced that they're going to allow seniors that are involved in spring sports to come back for another year if they so choose. Are you a fan of that decision?
You know what? I am, you know, because most of those seasons haven't even really got started. And bottom line is here, though, for our cadets at West Point, they aren't going to have an opportunity to come back. And I don't know how schools are going to handle it. If it gives these young men and women opportunities to finish out their senior seasons, I think it's great. I feel awful for the cadets here at West Point because, you know what, they're going on to a bigger calling. You know, I look at our guys, they had a dream of being a Division I college hockey player. And I know Rick, he's a BU guy, and our guys, no different. Like they wanted to play college hockey at the highest level. And so opportunities, an opportunity came for them to come here to West Point, and they do their homework and find out, hey, that's a great school. And so those two things, being an athlete, you know, getting a great education, the Army part, most of our guys don't know anything about the military. But by the time they get through their 47-month experience here, you know what? They're ready to lead this nation's sons and daughters, and that's what That's what all the cadets. So even for the seniors here, like I said, I feel awful for all of our seniors. You know, I think hockey, wrestling were the winter sports that were obviously hit the hardest by this. But then all the spring sports. But those cadet athletes, they're going to go on and do amazing things. And next year, you know what? They'll be they could be right in the middle of the fight.
Coach Brian Riley, head coach of Army Hockey, joining us here, 98.7 ESPN. That's kind of where I wanted to go. And, of course, it doesn't make it easier because this is awful for everyone, and there's not a person out there that doesn't have a story of how difficult this is, sports or not. But does it give you any solace to know that for your guys, hockey is kind of the tip of the iceberg, and what they have to accomplish is so much bigger and greater in the grand scheme of things? And I know it doesn't make it easy, but does it give you any – none at all?
Well, probably not. Like, because I just feel bad for our players, and you know, I know as one of their coaches that they are going to go on and represent our program, but more importantly, the academy, how it should be represented, and I feel awful for them. West Point's a preeminent leadership institution in the world, and I think a lot of our players would tell you that. As a result of being a hockey player at West Point, that's where they learned a lot of their leadership skills. And so this experience, as bad as it is and as awful as it was on that Thursday morning or that Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock when I had to tell them that their season was over, this experience is going to make them better leaders. And as a result of this experience, like I said, I think they'll be better because of it.
Coach, what about this year's seniors will stand out in your mind as you look back and remember this team in comparison to all the other teams you coached at West Point?
Yeah, you know, so every year it's, first of all, when you look at your senior class every year, it's like, where has the time gone, right? Like, and I look at that with these guys, but, you know, you hope that classes, you hope that they leave the program better than when they got there, and this class certainly did that. Like we were having a real good year here. We had some exciting highlights, and they were the group. Like you need your best players to be your best players, and you know what, I thought these guys stepped up and did it. I will be forever grateful to be able to look at this group and say that, you know what, I was able to be their coach, one of their coaches.
Well, Coach, listen, Rick, you don't have any more, do you?
No, I'm actually just enjoying listening to him speak, to be honest. I've had the opportunity to go up and skate up at West Point. And
I remember, Rick, you were here with the World Junior team when you got, I forget where you guys were going. I was amazed at how you were handling the puck, and Jesus, you must have shot about 20 pucks into the stand. Like, I'm like, look at this guy. But no, I remember seeing on the ice thinking, man, maybe I could go down and talk to him and see, maybe he might want to stay here at West Point. So,
you know what? You probably should have. My dad, that's actually something my dad used to always talk about, because my dad enlisted into the Army when he was 19, and he served in Vietnam, and then he was in the National Guard for, I want to say, 25 years. So he would always say stuff like that, like, hey, you ever consider maybe going to West Point? I said, if I had the opportunity, I would consider it, absolutely. I was just always so impressed with, and this is a testament to you and your brother and your dad. I mean, the quality, the caliber of student athlete that you guys got up at West Point was always really, really, just how they carried themselves was always so impressive.
Yeah, you know, like, so we started having NHL teams come in here, I don't know, probably 10 or 11 years ago, and I wanted to do it so the NHL players could have a greater appreciation for the men and women that are serving our country, and I also wanted to be able to tell them the story about two of our players that have been killed in action, and just to help their legacy live on. But it's been an amazing experience. By the time the NHL players leave West Point from their visit, they make it so that they make our players feel like that they are their idols instead of our players looking at them knowing that they are their idols, right? Like, so you know what? Being around West Point, being around cadets, just like I told you, the most rewarding and humbling experience that you can ever have. Like, I truly believe that I have the best, not just college hockey coaching job, but I have the best coaching job in the country, because I get to be around these amazing, I mean, these people that are basically volunteering to serve their country in a time of war. You know, like I said, it's just really, really humbling, and I'm thankful. Like I said, I didn't know why my dad as a kid stayed here, but now I know why he stayed, and I'm just really, really lucky to have this opportunity.
And I think we all feel really, really lucky to have had the conversation with you today. We appreciate you. We appreciate what your team has done and will continue to do, not only on the ice, but certainly off the ice as well. Thanks for a couple of minutes. Stay safe, stay healthy, and hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up in happier times, Coach. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me, and stay healthy, all of you as well, and hopefully look forward to doing this again.
All right. Terrific. That, of course, is Brian Riley, the head coach of Army Hockey. And I got to tell you, you know, I didn't know what to expect coming into the conversation, but that really outdistanced anything I was anticipating. He was just terrific and honest and to the point and just it was a really good conversation, I thought.
No, he's awesome. And I mean, the experience that I had up at West Point, I mean, and he's not lying. I mean, we have NHL teams go up there. I mean, that's truly how you feel when you leave.
But of course,
like when
it
you
would
get a
be.
Chance to meet, but I mean, it's, but you don't realize, like, you realize that it's going to be an unbelievable experience when you go up there, and then you get a chance to meet coach, and then you get a chance to meet the guys on the team, and you see what they go through, and you kind of, you live that life for a couple days, and then you realize, you know, what they're training to become, and what the decision that they made means, like where this eventually is going to end up. I mean, he said it, he's going to be, you know, these kids are going to lead a group of people, I mean, potentially into war. I mean, that's what they've signed up for. So it seems, I mean, it makes everything that you complain about, or everything that, you know, you're sitting there complaining about, you know, my laundry isn't, or there's just the stupidest trivial things. You're like, what am I complaining about? Like, well, we have a great, like, I mean, these, what they're doing is way, way beyond anything that we're doing.
But Rick, it's because of that that makes what happened to their season suck that much more. You know what I'm saying? Because they're going out to lead a life of being selfless and defending this country's freedoms. You would just like them to be able to have that opportunity in college for them to be able to accomplish some of their individual goals, because the goals that they're going to be striving for later on in life are about protecting this country. So for me, it just feels like one of those things that you wish you really could have allowed them to have the ending to their season, you know, that they should have, rather than having it stripped away from them because of this virus.
It stinks.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, there's no two ways about it. This stinks, and there's not anybody that is getting off scot-free, right? I mean,
well, you know what it is, too, Dave? Dave, you know what it is, though, what it comes down to, too? Mm-hmm. And listening to Coach speak, and then one of the most powerful experiences of my entire life was we had, and I have a picture sitting in my office. So we're in the locker room before one of our games with the Islanders, and Colin Powell comes in to give us our pregame speech, which was like we couldn't believe that he was in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm part of a team, a little bit bigger. You know, he goes, I'm the leader of a team, a little bit bigger, a couple million. And then it hits you in what he's talking about. And like everything that your coaches from the time you're a kid growing up to the time you get to, you know, the pinnacle of your career, talking about a team and teamwork and trusting your teammates and everything else. I mean, there is no better team than the military. You know what I mean? Like what they're like, you talk about trust and leadership and everything else. That's what these men and women, they're the epitome of that.
Right. But I thought it's interesting what he said, where this will only make them better leaders and having persevered through more. And I'm sure, listen, it's hard to look at the positives through this unbelievably negative moment here. But if there's any faction of people that would be and can be and are going to be able to do it, I would put my money on the people that he deals with day in and day out.
Yeah, which I can only imagine would make the conversation that he had to have with his team and the seven seniors that much more difficult.
Yeah, unbelievable. All right, as we know, schools will survive and communities will thrive again. But for student athletes who have lost their senior seasons due to this pandemic, 98.7 ESPN would like to salute you for accomplishing great achievements in scholastics and athletics. Please email us at 987ESPN@gmail.com to tell your athlete story, and we'll do our very best to share those stories. Like Sean, better known as S-Rod, one of 10 seniors on the Susquehanna University baseball team and one of two 50-year pitchers. Now, he made the tough decision last year that he wasn't done playing after an arm injury sidelined him. Now that the season has been canceled, Sean has been devastated about the decision to return. Last year, Sean's team won their championship and went on to the regionals. Their goal this year was to return and continue on. Shout out to you, S-Rod, and all the seniors on the Susquehanna University baseball team. You know, I was going to ask Coach to join us and do it with us, but I didn't know if he would want to do an observations, Rick, so I figured I wouldn't ask him.
Yeah, I don't want to put him in that situation. I'm sure he would, but
yeah, I mean,
did he not sound just like Brent Musburger?
Exactly like him. Exactly like
him. His voice was just so soothing.
I was going to say, can you do me a favor and say you are looking live here at West Point, and I figured that might cross the line, but he did sound exactly like Brent Musburger.
That was good. I enjoyed that. I hope we do. We should do that. We should definitely have him on again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so MLB The Show 20 finally here. 98.7 ESPN has a chance to hit a home run. Your chance to hit a home run. Batting, pitching, fielding, all been updated to show off your quick thinking and precision cat-like moves. And for the first time ever, full minor league rosters are in the MLB The Show 20. For a chance to win your copy, text MLB Show to 44202. We'll select 10 winners on Monday, April 13th. Again, here's what you do. Text MLB Show to 44202. MLB The Show 20. It's what your baseball dreams are made of. Welcome to the show, rated E for everyone. Get it now at theshow.com.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.